I don't know why it is so many of us burst out of the schoolhouse, sling open the doors to the world, and immediately slam shut the doors to our minds. If you live to be 100, the most important thing I can say to you is use every day of your life to make a concentrated and continuing effort to learn. Don't ever relax. Gobble up every morsel of knowledge placed within your reach. And that'll lead you to more knowledge and more knowledge. And it'll pay you back tenfold. And what that also means is pay attention to who you associate with. Andy Andrews says, treat your life and your quest for knowledge like a tennis match. Always play with somebody better than you. That's the only way you get better. You don't get better beating somebody who's worse than you. And do the same thing with your life. Associate with folks more knowledgeable, wiser than you are. And you will always be lifted. Learn. It's so important. And don't restrict that learning process to your chosen specialty or even your profession. Learn everything you can about every nook and cranny of this world, because you never know when it might help you do exactly what you never thought you'd be wanting to do. I knew a kid once who hated English, hated literature, hated spelling and vocabulary, hated history. And his grades belied his affection for those subjects. Just give me the courses I need to earn a living, turn me loose, and that's exactly what happened. And now that same kid is kicking himself till it hurts for his stupidity. I know it hurts because I am that kid, and I'd give a lot right now for a decent vocabulary, for a strong background in literature, and for a little knowledge of history. Because I'm currently neck deep in research on colonial America for a writing project that has grown very close to my heart. History in English. Who'd have thought it? And I'm having to start over from scratch. Open up that old brain and let in some of that stuff you just know you're never going to need. Shortly after being hired by a small production company in Dallas to produce and direct television commercials, this was way back in the 60s, I called the manager over at a laboratory in town and asked him if he would give me a tour of the lab. Tell me all there was to know about labs in one afternoon. I found I didn't much like the idea of working hard to shoot a piece of film, then seeing it disappear into all this smelly juice and equipment and never coming back looking like I thought it was going to look. So I took the tour and I asked a lot of questions, and every answer produced still more questions. And at 7 o'clock that night, I was still there. Before I left, I had a pretty good idea of what was happening when I sent a roll of film to the lab. And it wasn't long before that came in handy, because I wanted to accomplish something for a client that the lab foreman told me was impossible. Couldn't be done. So I thought about it, and I thought about what I'd learned when I toured the lab, and I said, wait a minute. Why couldn't you do this, then follow it with this, and kind of back into it this way? There was this long silence. And finally, the lab foreman said, well, if you want to do it that way. Now, I have no desire to work in a lab, but if I hadn't spent the time to learn something about it, I never would have accomplished what I was trying to accomplish for the client. And that in itself was another learning experience, because it taught me to be awfully skeptical whenever anybody says, that's impossible. You'll begin to see the value of that little bit of knowledge as we go along. Never settle for just getting by. Learn. Be a leader. Be excellent. Be resourceful. Be innovative. Seek wisdom. Associate with folks more knowledgeable than yourself. And then in time, you'll be doing exactly what you want. And both you and the world will be better for it. But above all, do it first. And talk about it later. Might seem slower that way, but the results last longer. And while you're learning, don't be afraid to look ignorant in the process. Don't be afraid to ask dumb questions. Don't be afraid to make mistakes, because that's part of the process. That's learning, and that's honest. That's gaining wisdom. It's a natural human tendency to want to preserve our egos, to want to not look dumb. But I say look forward to looking dumb, because you're going to learn something in the process. When somebody says, of course, you know about the hyperglyphic polarization factor when applied to deferred income, don't just squeeze out a half smile and nod. seize the opportunity to learn something. Say, no, what the heck is the hyperglyphic polarization factor and why does it only apply to deferred income? The answer might be important, it might not. But you've learned something that you didn't know before, which means you've used your brain once when you didn't plan on it, and that in itself is important. The brain, you see, is like any other part of the body, performs better when it's exercised. Use every opportunity you can to take it out for a jog. It'll pay handsomely. What you do speaks so loudly, I can't hear what you say. That means you don't have to worry about sounding dumb, because what you learn from sounding dumb is going to keep what you do from being dumb. Seek wisdom. Dare to dream, because you can never fail until you quit. We had a morale problem develop during the filming of the original Benji. It began with our opening title shot, a very complicated shot involving a long, slow, hopefully smooth dolly across the bumpy front yard of this old abandoned two-story mansion in the little town of McKinney, Texas. After moving in for about 20 seconds, the shot melted into a long, slow, hopefully smooth zoom to a single broken pane of a second-story window. And exactly one beat after the zoom stopped, exactly timed with the first downbeat of music, Benji was supposed to pop his head through the window and sniff the morning air as if he had just awakened for the day. This was important. As I said, it was the first shot of the movie, and the first time the audience sees Benji, our very first opportunity to reach out and grab them and suck them right into this dog's heart and soul. To say this is not a trained dog doing tricks for a movie, this is the beginning of an experience with a real dog living his independent life, struggling to win, just like we all do every day. So the shot and Benji's attitude had to be just right. And it was at least 90 seconds long and loaded to the brim with variables. We shot that sucker 84 times. It was the first thing we ever shot, and 3 months later, it was the last thing we ever shot. We set it up at least once a week, every week of the production schedule. It was an early morning sequence, so the first time we shot it early in the morning. Seemed logical. But the house faced east. And as the sun crept over the horizon, it flooded the face of the house with glowing, deep orange light. Looked like sunset. Benji was perfect. He'd slept for 13 hours. He was rested, happy, ready to go for a bright new morning. He popped through the window and sniffed just like it was scripted. But the house looked dreadful. I should have known better. I should have done my homework. I should have learned that to get an east-facing house to look like morning, you shoot it at sunset, backlit. So that's the way we did it the second time. The backlight washed out all the color in the sky, made everything look crisp and cool, just like morning. Everything except Benji. He had been working for 12 hot Texas summer hours that day, and when his head dragged through the window, he looked like he had been hit by a truck. His tongue was down to here. After many trials and errors, what we finally had to do was put Benji to bed in the air conditioning about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, let him sleep for about 4 hours, put an electric skillet below the window, downwind, out of his sight so he wouldn't look at it, put half a dozen strips of bacon in the skillet, turn on a fan that would waft the aroma of that frying bacon right up under Benji's nose, not leaving those sniffs up to chance. I think it was take 79, and at last, everything worked perfectly. No one on the crew except Benji's trainer had ever worked a full-length movie before, so there were a lot of mistakes being made, most of them mine, and there was a lot of reshooting. But the mistakes were not the issue. The issue was what would be happening to the audience who would hopefully be sitting in a theater a year or so down the line. The word around Dallas was that we had a disaster on our hands. The camp obviously did not have a clue, not the vaguest idea what he was doing. The film clearly didn't have a prayer of ever getting finished, much less ever getting released. And the crew, most of whom had taken part of their salary and points, would go back to Dallas in the evenings and on the weekends and listen to this and they had begun to believe. Morale was on the floor. So I called off shooting one afternoon and gathered the troops in one of the rooms of the old house we were using as a set, and I nervously stumbled and stammered my way through an effort to explain to them what I felt good was all about. What I tried to tell them was this: I don't believe that doing something well is predicated upon being an expert or being perfect or being above mistakes. There are those who believe that because they have a title or a position, they are supposed to be infallible. They can't bring themselves to let anyone think they could possibly make a mistake. But what I believe is that being good demands a willingness to recognize your mistakes and correct them before it's too late. To swallow your pride and look beyond the criticism of the moment, to make decisions that are hopefully best for the project you're working on in the long run. When a year from now, as in our case, an audience would be sitting in a theater daring us to entertain them. Get rid of the naysayers. When we left the room that day, we had lost more than an hour of shooting, but the crew was back on the offensive. Notice also that there were numerous times in that story where we could have quit, but we didn't quit, and we didn't fail. It hurts to admit you're wrong. It's painful, but the eye and the mind and the effort must be focused on the end result, not today's embarrassment. Your gaze must be firmly fixed on what you're trying to accomplish. Now, there's an old speech topic, but it's still an important one. The reason is simple. It's basic. Because if you don't set goals, you don't know where you're going. And if you don't know where you're going, how in the world do you ever expect to get there?